Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're discussing Sofia Coppola's new movie, On the Rocks. What's on the rocks? Well, two things. A relationship and some very nice looking cocktails. This is a film about men and women and fathers and daughters and husbands and wives. Rashida Jones plays Laura, a New York novelist, mother and wife to Marlon Wayans's Dean, a go-getting startup guy whose job is eating up the romance of their marriage. Is Dean having an affair, wonders Laura, after his business trips get longer, further and more frequent? Laura's would-be first responder is her father Felix, a twinkly, impish Bill Murray, a charming art dealer with a penchant for the ladies, as he himself might put it. Felix proceeds to have Dean followed while holding forth on women and men and men and women over many martinis in many of New York's loveliest bars. The film becomes an unlikely buddy movie as father and daughter enjoy steak suppers and stakeouts in his vintage sports car. Felix has the best lines and the best clothes and can charm his way out of traffic violations even, but he's failed many women. How real is the world he's presenting to his daughter, and will there be a reckoning? It's a film that possesses the sheen and style of much of Sofia Coppola's work, and it's a beautiful, rather old-fashioned thing that calls to mind the best of New York's filmmakers. And it's a film, too, that seems perhaps to be asking how much of that old-school charm we should trust in the 21st century. But in a subtle way, and, as I say, with many martinis and great lines.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, kiddo.
Oh, my gosh, do you look beautiful. Cliff, how's your mom's hip?
Good, thanks.
Good. He thinks you're my girlfriend.
Grace.
Been busy?
Yeah. Dean's traveling with clients all the time, and I'm just the buzzkill waiting to schedule things. Just, I'm so stuck.
So Dean's going away a lot, huh? On business trips?
Dad.
Raise your hand if that sounds fishy.
He's not like you. He's a good guy, a great dad.
Sure, it's nature. Males are forced to fight, to dominate, and to impregnate all females.
Joining me today are the writer and critic Casper Salmon and the film critic and host of the Girls on Film podcast, Anna Smith. Welcome both to the programme. Lovely to be Zooming with you today.
Hey, good to Zoom with you too.
Good to Oh, man. But this, while we're still in the kind of weird era of the new, this is a film that seems to hark back to a certain version of New York. Anna, in what sort of filmic universe are we in? What kind of version of New York do we find ourselves in On the Rocks?
I'd say it's a very idealized, nostalgic one, and it's incredibly wealthy. I mean, if you're annoyed by sort of great displays of wealth and privilege, then don't watch this film. But if you do have a kind of vicarious enjoyment of seeing people hang out in beautiful art galleries, wonderful expensive restaurants where everyone knows your name, and bars and fantastic apartments, then this is the film for you. It certainly reminded me of some of Coppola's other work, but also felt, you know, some of the Noah Baumbach's work, slightly more grand than that, but still that kind of media indie world where everyone kind of knows each other because, you know, they're working in media type industries, and it seems to be quite a privileged existence, but one that's quite a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, it was a kind of nice, it was a nice universe to inhabit. It was certainly impossible after watching the film not to get the cocktail shaker out for sure and dust off some jackets. But Casper, is it a world that you crept into shyly or that you embraced?
I suppose I was sort of put off by it after a little while. But I do think it's presented kind of ironically, and Sofia Coppola at least shows some kind of self-awareness, you know, and sort of perhaps pokes fun at her privilege, because she's been castigated in the past during her career for kind of having this privileged existence and filming people who really belong to the, you know, the upper set. And here I think she's kind of poking fun at that as well. I'm reminded of some scenes, you know, just there are so many moments of name dropping, and there's Cartier, and there's so many artists and, you know, painting deals going down. And the scene where Bill Murray reminisces about having been to the Tuileries and then driven to Giverny sort of seems so rarefied. And I think at times she's kind of she's kind of ironic here. So it's not totally off-putting.
You'd rather it was set in Scunthorpe, guys, it sounds.
It would be interesting to see what she did with that.
We are in rarefied surroundings. Felix, the father, Bill Murray's character, he's an art dealer, and he only mentions the name of one living artist, I think, and that's Hockney, who's certainly in the winter of his career, I suppose. So there is a sort of harking back, and I wondered, I sort of chucked this in as an idea in the introduction, and Anna, maybe I can come to you first on this. I wonder whether you feel that there's a little bit of the 20th century and sort of 20th century New York cinema and characters sort of rubbing up against the 21st century. We've got the dad who's the art dealer and this kind of rarefied old white dude who can get away with anything, against the kind of tech guy of the 21st century, Dean, which is Laura's husband. Do you think there's anything in that, that it's a bit of a battle of civilizations, perhaps a culture war?
I think it is. And I think a large part of the plot, without giving too much away, is to do with Felix, played by Bill Murray's immediate assumption that his daughter's husband is cheating on her, because that's what men do.
Well, that's what he'd do, right?
Yes, exactly. So he judges everyone by his own standards, and everywhere he goes, to a very amusing fashion, he cracks onto every single woman he meets. And that is a very funny part of the film, but it also is making a serious point that he comes from that world where he just thinks that, and he explains this quite clearly, he mansplains it to her many times, that this is how men operate, it's impossible for them not to cheat. And then, of course, we see a very different contrast, perhaps, with Marlon Wayans' Dean. And a lot of the guessing game isn't he cheating? But I think Coppola is highlighting an important distinction between generations here, and one that is hopefully correct, that the Bill Murrays of this world, of the Felixes, are kind of dying out, perhaps, and that very archaic, albeit amusing and charming, attitude might be disappearing.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the dynamic, because the main dynamic in this movie is that between Laura and her father. How is that portrayed? I mean, it's definitely there is the sort of the chaste romance of the father-daughter romance here, Casper, right?
Yeah, there is. There's something a bit Freudian going on. Sofia Coppola sort of riffs on that at a moment when the two of them are forced to pretend to be lovers when they're about to be recognised at a point when they're stalking out her husband to see if he's having an affair. Yeah, so I think there is something quite interesting there going on. And then, you know, there's also an autobiographical element here, I think, to do with Sofia Coppola's incredibly wealthy and charismatic father. And I think there's a few kind of meta-textual elements here that make that really interesting. So as Laura, she has Rashida Jones, who's the daughter of Quincy Jones, who has experience herself of being the daughter of a millionaire. And I think that plays into the film. And then also Bill Murray himself has this kind of caddish reputation. I should add, not to spoil the fun too much, but whenever I talk about Bill Murray, I do think it's worth reminding people, Bill Murray was accused of spousal abuse by his wife during their divorce proceedings, and she subsequently withdrew the claim. But I do think it's important to note these things, and I do think that also kind of plays into his performance of the role. You know, there's something quite regretful and quite wistful about his performance.
Yeah, there is someone that perhaps realizes that they're in the autumn of their kind of career. He almost comes back. He's almost kind of it feels like he's coming back into his daughter's life because of the absence of the husband, who's on these business trips and all the rest of it. Whether or not he's having an affair, viewers will have to find out for themselves. But it's as if he jumps in because he kind of misses her, but also he can't help doing the flirting thing because he's that kind of guy. I listened to an interview with Sofia Coppola, who said that this was actually based on her and her father. She and Francis would go out when she was old enough to date and old enough to go and have martinis in nice bars in Manhattan. They obviously had quite a, and probably do have quite a nice sort of honest relationship. She would bitch about boys and he would offer sort of relationship advice. So this is obviously very close to the very close to autobiography for Sofia Coppola there. And I suppose, well, I wonder what both of you think, that she thought she was on in comfortable territory with Bill Murray, someone that she's worked with before. What parallels do we draw, though, between this and Lost in Translation, which was which is obviously a romance between Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson's character?
Well, it's an interesting one, and it's a slightly queasy one initially, of course, because in Lost in Translation, there is a suggestion, perhaps, of an attraction between the two central characters because they are not related. And the fact that they're related in this one is it's slightly weird making comparisons, but there is something Freudian, and there is even a point where Felix sort of says things like, oh, they think you're my girlfriend, and he says it sort of rather proudly about his daughter. Those kind of slightly inappropriate moments seems more extreme than Lost in Translation, but there are definitely parallels, and similar pace to Lost in Translation, I'd say, similar focus on, you know, older man, younger woman, similar certain things left unsaid and left to the imagination, and just that kind of sense of let's take it easy, let's just watch these characters go about their way without particularly having a notable aim in sight, let's just enjoy their company. I thought that was very comparable.
Yeah, and what about the script? Because we mentioned that there are lots of great lines in it. Bill Murray's character has got this chat, which is very much in the arena of mansplaining. He talks less about art than he talks about women's bodies, I suppose, and what he can deduce from them. But nonetheless, it is amusingly written. What do you think about the script? I mean, it's light on plot, this thing, but heavy on charm. That's what I'm saying. Casper, where do you sit on that timeline?
I mean, I do think the film is kind of flimsy. It has its charms, and some of that is to do with the chemistry between the leads, I think. And then the script is kind of, it's incredibly lightly worn. It reminded me a little bit of those... you know, a few years ago, there was a kind of meme of Garfield strips where the cat has disappeared from the from the drawings. And so all you're left with is kind of a quite dry and weird panel with just the kid kind of imagining his absent cat. And it reminded me a bit of that because it felt like a comedy without really any laughs. So sort of there were kind of beats missing all over the place. It felt quite strange in its tone. And I just think it's sort of a rather a light, kind of perhaps underworked film in some ways. And I see that extending to, for instance, the plot where Sofia Coppola has to imagine or contrive, rather, all of these reasons for Laura not to confront her husband. And none of that sort of holds true, I think.
What about the idea of it as a sort of buddy movie? She said that in an interview, that she kind of wanted it to be an unlikely buddy movie. Did that hold any sway with you, Casper?
Yeah, kind of. I felt a bit sorry for Rashida Jones, who again is reduced to the role of a straight man in this film. And it just reminded me a little bit of her slightly unrewarding role in Parks and Rec, where she's kind of reduced to doing reaction shots. And here I think she is kind of, she's sort of dominated by Bill Murray in the charisma stakes, but also in everything that they've been given to do. And so I'm not sure about it as a buddy movie either. I think there's an imbalance, and it doesn't totally work for me.
There's a rich tradition of buddy movie-ish things that happen. There's the stakeout. There's them actually genuinely hiding in a bush, which is quite good stuff. Do you think though, Anna, that it's maybe not played for laughs? It's a little drier than a caper.
Yeah, I think it's sort of somewhere between comedy and drama in a very safe, gentle space. But I wish it could go further in either direction. I think Casper's right that perhaps by going more for the laughs with Bill Murray, you're missing out on some characterisation there. I wanted to see a little bit more about the lot of a busy mother's life, which is an aspect of the film. But it seemed to be that because of her privilege, she was able to drop the kids with a babysitter at the drop of a hat, and then suddenly, magically, problems were over. I thought one of the funniest characters was played by, I think, Jenny Slade, and she's a woman who, another mother at school, so every time Laura's doing the drop-off, she is stuck with this woman constantly talking about her own trivial problems, absolutely unaware of what's going around her, that anyone else has got any children to deal with or anything. And that really made me laugh out loud. But I think it's not, for me, Coppola's finest work, because it doesn't quite find that confidence space either of comedy or drama.
Well, let's try and fit this into Sofia Coppola's filmography, her oeuvre. I mean, she's been, people have said in reviews of this movie that, you know, that it's a slight thing, but it's got depth. I know the New York Times kind of felt that this was the thing. I thought that too. I liked the film, I think, more than both of you guys did. But where does it slot? Because she's been accused of this, if that's the right word, or it's been commented on before that her films have a gloss to them. Not that they're necessarily sort of shiny, but that they gloss perhaps over things and you have to fill in the blanks yourself. Is that the case with this movie? Is that the case with all of her films? Where do we slot this into her oeuvre?
Well, I think Lost in Translation is perhaps its closest relative, but I don't think it's as good as that because it doesn't get to grips with the characters as much. And I don't think it, I mean, much as I actually did enjoy this film, it's just more of a wash over you film, as you suggest. Also, another one that I really liked, which is kind of an unsung Coppola film, is Somewhere, starring Stephen Dorff as a jaded movie star who's killing
time.
Yeah, it's great,
one,
isn't it? Chateau Marmont. And I thought that one was more perceptive and gave its character more room to breathe, perhaps because it did centre around mainly one person. So those are the two closest relatives, although of course you've got, you know, The Bling Ring also had lots of bling, which this does. But in The Beguiled and The Virgin Suicides are quite different beasts, I would say, generally.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Somewhere there. That also, again, is that Stephen Dorff playing a kind of big Hollywood actor who's kind of estranged from his daughter. And again, he kind of finds salvation through hanging out with her and making her happy, and finds that he can actually make himself happy by making someone else happy. There's a little bit of that, in fact, more than a little bit of that in On the Rocks, isn't there, Anna?
Yeah, I think so. They're definitely related thematically with that. I think Somewhere did it better, but it's interesting to see that naturally there must be something autobiographical, as you said, that Coppola has confirmed in that. And, they, you know, the old adage of write what you know, it makes sense. She clearly knows this territory.
Yeah, well, that film opens with him driving a Lamborghini or something round and round and round a car park, doesn't it? So we're in sort of vaguely similar territory, yeah.
Definitely.
Casper, where would you fit On the Rocks into Sofia Coppola's kind of filmography?
I really do think it's a lesser movie in her filmography. I was interested, actually, while Anna was talking just there, to think that in terms of her previous films, you know, we were talking about Stephen Dorff and about those roles of these kind of jaded men. And it's interesting to me that her female protagonists so far have been girls. And here we have a woman and she's a mother. And it's interesting that this film tries to make her a girl in some ways as well. Her father is constantly patronising her and ordering a drink for her and calling her the girl. And I think it's quite interesting that Laura in this film is a woman, but she still sort of feels like she doesn't really have that much agency. And it's quite interesting to me to see how she is kind of still moulded by the men in her life and buffeted between the two of them. So I'd say in terms of Sofia Coppola's career, it marks a kind of move into new territory, but it finds her coming back to some old themes, and I think it does so in a fairly light way, and I'm not too sure why. I'm not too sure why her previous ambitions have kind of deserted her, formal ambitions at least.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Women come off badly in this film, I thought, actually, because you've got Felix, twinkly Felix, you've got Dean, but you've got that funny scene with the mothers, the bitchy mothers in that lovely house in upstate New York, which is sort of funny but very catty. Anna, it's a funny one. We're in a very 20th century universe, at least with how women are treated in this film, perhaps.
Yeah, it is complex, and I think it's very interesting that she doesn't give herself a female best friend and confidant, perhaps because, you know, Felix takes that role in her life and it would be complicating matters. But she does seem remarkably lonely and alienated from the other women around her, which, you know, as I know of the host of a podcast called Girls on Film, is very rare in films by women, about women. You know, you normally see women interacting interacting with each other much more than you do in this film, and much more successfully. And also there's a very interesting scene where she goes to an art gallery. There's a function that Dean's hosting, and she meets a woman, or a group of women, that she suddenly begins to wonder if he's having an affair with, and they don't behave particularly well towards her. But there is also the sense that there is perhaps some of her paranoia at work here, and her exhaustion as a mother, and her jumping to conclusions. And I thought actually that was quite interesting and possibly quite realistic. So I wouldn't say that women necessarily come off badly, but I would say it's perhaps quite confessional about the loneliness and the difficulties that a busy mother could experience.
Yes, yeah, indeed. That might be the case. Right. So that was you guys talking about On the Rocks. This is the bit of the programme where we talk about the things that it made you think of. Casper, you're going first with Sam Mendes's Away We Go.
Yeah, I picked Away We Go because this film made me think about that. I think after a few films that showed real ambition, Sam Mendes retreated into a kind of little thing in Away We Go. And in the main roles, he put comedians, TV comedians, in Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski. And the film is peopled with other characters who they come into contact with. And it's a film that I really dislike. And I didn't dislike On the Rocks to this extent. But I think it betrays that kind of sort of a lack of ambition. And he's kind of undone by having these comedians in the main role. And there's sort of a want of cinema there in Away We Go. And I was reminded of that here, and I think I kept thinking about sitcoms, and I kept thinking about these TV comedians, essentially, because, you know, Bill Murray, although he is a film star, comes from that same universe that Rashida Jones does as well, of TV skits. And I think Jenny Slate as well, it was a stand-up comedian at least. And so all of that gives this film quite a strange vibe. And I was sort of confused by it and trying to put my finger on it, really. And I think it makes the film really opaque and finally a little bit disappointing, because when it has to reach dramatic heights, it sort of fails to.
Fill our listeners in on what happens or doesn't in a way we go, Casper.
Well, Away We Go is about a couple played by Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski who get pregnant and then basically spend the rest of the film trying to work out the best place for them to live. And they go around visiting their friends to see where they live and inhabit their own universes for a little bit before finally retreating to the most perfect place that they could have, which is their own company, because they're incredibly self-satisfied. And so it's a kind of mock epic, almost, you know, a journey amongst these caricatures, these stereotypical sorts that they know. And it's a kind of satire of modern America. And you see some elements of that in this film as well, with these rich characters and you know, in Jenny Slate's performance, which I agree with Anna is really funny and a real gem in this film. But it's the same sort of Noah Baumbach-y kind of satire or parody of modern mores. And so it reminded me of that a little bit, of this way of kind of retreating into a mode for Sofia Coppola that we haven't known her to explore totally in this vein. You know, there are parallels with Lost in Translation, but I think she's going for something different here, something that the beats are different.
Okay, so with Away We Go, it's your feeling is that is the back of a napkin idea, but not in a good way.
Yeah, basically. And it's also a way for a director who had shown startling ambition and made really quite sort of complex or signature films to do something a bit more skittish, change up their register a bit.
Yeah, so this is the potboiler. This is sort of every other Patricia Highsmith Ripley novel other than the first one kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anna, you have chosen Groundhog Day. Which is bringing a smile to Holly and I here in the studio. So obviously there's the Bill Murray parallel. Talk us through why this made you think of Groundhog Day.
Well, obviously, Bill Murray is extremely good at playing the world-weary smart aleck who is slow at learning the error of his ways. And I think both of these films come into that category. I do think his performance in On the Rocks is quite distinct and actually slightly different from a lot of those roles he's played before. A little bit more superior again in some ways. But Ground Day, of course, he plays Phil Connors, the cynical weatherman who experiences the same day over and over again and is very condescending about the small town in which he is trapped, and then of course must learn how to live with himself and live with other people as a day is repeated ad infinitum. And of course I chose this because I was watching On the Rocks at home when people are at home a lot more, kind of stuck in a bit of a loop. I mean, obviously it's been said before that lockdown and the pandemic has made us all think back to films like Groundhog Day and think how relevant they are. And I actually think there's a lot of value, not just because Groundhog Day is a fantastic film, but there's a lot of value in revisiting it because its message is especially relevant now, because it's a lot about community and getting to know those around you while you are stuck. So I think a lot of people at the moment are actually reaching out more to their local community and getting to know the guy in the corner shop, or you know, the people who work down the road, or their neighbours, and actually not dismissing them and going out looking for a party on the other side of town, but getting to know that community. And I actually do think for all its humour, Groundhog Day has a strong message about that.
When was the last time you watched it? Have you watched it during lockdown?
Yes, I did. I watched it about a couple of weeks into lockdown. I mean, I've watched it so many times, maybe 40 times. I watched it for a piece on Radio 4 a few years ago when it was actually Groundhog Day and an anniversary. But I mean, true to its concept, it just stands up to repeated viewing beautifully.
Yeah, imagine if it didn't. It's thematically unsafe. Okay, so we have a winner there, I think, which is Groundhog Day. Away we go. Caspar Salmon cast his aspersions. The back of a napkin, but not in a good way, he says. Thank you both very much. On the Rocks is out in cinemas now and will come to Apple TV Plus from the 23rd of October. Thank you to my guests, Anna Smith and Caspar Salmon. Monocle on Culture is produced by Holly Fisher. Join us at the same time next week. But until then, from me, Robert Bounds, thank you very much for tuning in.